From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is Film Week. Welcome, I'm Larry Mantle. Our critics this week are Angie Hahn of Mashable and Wade Major of Synagogues. We'll hear what they think of the drama The Nest from critics' favorite director Sean Durkin. The film stars Jude Law and Carrie Coon. The Netflix streaming thriller The Devil All the Time stars Tom Holland, Bill Skarsgård, and Riley Keough. And the documentary Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story, profiles those currently in the business and pioneering stunt women like Jeannie Epper and J.D. David. Epper doubled Linda Carter on TV's Wonder Woman. David doubled Pam Grier in her many 1970s films. We'll talk with both of the women later this hour. You're listening to Herman's Habit from the soundtrack of La La Land. It's Film Week right after NPR News.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Welcome to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Joining me this week are critics Wade Major of Synagogues.com and Angie Hahn of Mashable, where she's deputy entertainment editor. We begin with the UK-Canadian drama The Nest, starring Jude Law, Carrie Coon, and Charlie Shotwell. The film's written and directed by Sean Durkin. Wade, tell us about The Nest.
Absolutely fantastic. Sean Durkin hasn't really been on our radars for almost a decade, since Martha Marcy May Marlene, which was really quite a sensation back in 2011. I think this is a better film. It's not as sensational. It probably won't get critics as excited because it doesn't have as much dirt under the fingernails as Martha Marcy May Marlene did. But I think this is an extraordinary film, one of the best movies of the year, and really just establishes him as one of our very, very best filmmakers. It's really an extraordinary movie in the sense that it's about nothing, but yet it's about everything at the same time. It appears to be a relatively modest family drama. Jude Law is this Englishman who has come and he was an entrepreneur and he has an American family and things aren't quite going so well. Carrie Coon plays his wife and he wants to relocate back to England. So the family goes back to England so he can kind of get all of his business juices flowing again. But things aren't as they appear. And it feels like a thriller. It's paced like a thriller. The mood is like a thriller. But it's not a thriller. It's a family drama. And it finds all of its energy in the minutiae, in the small moments, in the eyes, in the looks, in the little gestures, in the things that are not said. Everything that happens on the surface is really not what the movie's about. It's about what happens between the seams. It's really a mature, beautiful piece of work, and I hope that this really, really maintains its momentum through award season.
We're talking about Sean Durkin's film, The Nest. Angie.
Yeah, Wade was just saying that he was worried critics wouldn't like it, but I feel like at least as far as we're concerned, they have 100% approval rating from us because I also really like this. I think the best way that I can think of to describe it is that it's like a haunted house story without any ghosts. So he borrows a lot of the cinematic language of a horror movie. First of all, the house looks like something that would, if you see it in a movie, you're just like, oh yes, that thing's haunted, obviously. And it's full of these dark, creaky rooms, and the corners are all cloaked in shadow, and, you know, so things like that. But in a lot of horror movies, you know, the supernatural ends up working as a metaphor for the real issues that are haunting the characters. So this kind of felt like it just did away with the middleman, where it's like if they move to a creepy house, but what's actually haunting these characters is just their actual own problems, no kind of supernatural entities needed. You know, it's like obviously, as Wade mentioned, Rory, the dad, has a lot of it. But then because of this move and because of the way that the dad is, it just creates all these other little fractures in this family. The kids start acting out, all of that. And I thought Law and Jude Law and Carrie Coon are also fantastic in this. Jude Law does really well playing these desperate, slimy men trying to protect project one image while concealing their true natures, and he does that really well again here. And Carrie Coon is someone we've seen show up in a lot of movies in supporting roles, like Gone Girl or Widow, so it's great to get her to see her really sink her teeth into a big, meaty role here. I think it's going to disappoint people who are coming in expecting a haunted house movie or a thriller or something like that, because as Wade said, it is kind of structured so that you kind of half expect that. But I think that it's a really effective way of getting at the way that feels when the people in it are miserably unhappy, you know, the oppressiveness and the paranoia and the way it makes you start to feel a little bit crazy. So I think it's a tremendous piece of work. Very moody, very beautiful, and also in its own way, really devastating.
We're talking about the drama The Nest from writer-director Sean Durkin, starring Jude Law, Carrie Coon, and Charlie Shotwell. It's rated R. It's screening in Orange County where theaters are open. The Devil All the Time is a thriller that's streaming on Netflix. It stars Tom Holland, Bill Skarsgård, and Riley Keough. Antonio Campos is the director and co-screenwriter with his brother, Paulo. Angie.
Oh, gosh, this movie. Okay. It's a Southern Gothic thriller about a small handful of families split between West Virginia and Ohio whose paths keep crossing over two or three decades. Most of their encounters end in really gory murders. But what the film really wants to be about is sin and evil and darkness in the hearts of man and all that. Like, the title is the tip off. It really is just 2 hours of people being horrible and murdery all the time, which you might think sounds either dark and exciting in a serial killer thriller way, especially because there are a couple of serial killer characters, or else kind of profound and weighty is like an intergenerational epic about war and generational trauma and fathers and sons and all that. But it's kind of too predictable and shallow to be either. The characters are paper thin. The plot is super predictable, despite its star-studded cast, which includes, as you mentioned, Tom Holland and Jason Clarke and all these other people. Only Robert Pattinson seems like he's really even having fun. And there's just so many absurd, big plot twists here that seem like they're trying to shock you with like how depraved human nature can be or something. But it just, because it doesn't feel earned at all, it ended up being so preposterous that I started heckling my screen while I was watching this movie at home. It's like the kind of movie where if a sweet angelic woman is like, "I'll see you later," you're just like, "Oh, you're a goner. We're not going to see you again." It almost kind of felt like, you know, when you watch a movie and the characters in it are watching a fake movie,
yeah.
It feels like it's almost one of those movies. And if there's a silver lining to all of this, it's that it's taking itself so seriously that the more seriously it takes itself, the sillier it got. And I came into this movie thinking that I was going to be either bored or pissed off by it just because the description didn't really sound like my speed, but it's kind of too stupid to be mad at. Like, I ended up having a better time than I expected, but not necessarily in a way that's flattering to the film.
The Devil All the Time, streaming on Netflix. Wade.
I broke out into a cold sweat yesterday, afraid that I might have to introduce this. I'm so glad Angie did, because she nailed it. That is the perfect summation of it. I think in our emails exchanges yesterday, I said that I couldn't figure out if it was Raymond Carver on PCP, John Cheever on acid, or Tennessee Williams on meth. And I think I've decided that it's probably all three. It really is very nicely done. I mean, it's beautifully shot and it's well acted and everyone takes it incredibly seriously, which is part of the problem. And I was trying to figure out, why is it that I love Ozark so much on television, which is a little bit the same thing, where everyone is awful, everyone does horrible things. And I think the difference is that on Ozark, even though everyone is living in this purgatorial nightmare, they're all really trying to do the right thing. They just can't. Here, everyone is evil. They're all evil. They're all killing each other. They all have malice in their hearts. And it just has this horrible, horrible, hopeless veneer to it. And, you know, at a certain point, I was doing the same thing Angie was. I was almost heckling the screen. About every 5 minutes, I was looking at the events and going, really? Are you really? And it's just kind of incredible. And it's over 2 hours long. And I don't know what kind of an audience there is for this.
The Devil All the Time, starring Tom Holland, Bill Skarsgård, and Riley Keough. Antonio Campos is the director and co-screenwriter. It's rated R, streaming now on Netflix. The documentary Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story, is directed by April Wright, who'll be joining us later this hour to talk about the film, along with two of the veteran stunt women who were profiled among many in the unrated documentary. Angie.
Yeah, I ended up liking this one a lot. I was a little worried at first. It kind of starts off with this jumble of information and all these talking head interviews where you're not really sure who the people are at first and all that. And there's this voiceover that almost made it seem like a trailer or like one of those DVD bonus features. But once it kind of settles into what it's actually doing, it ends up being this really fascinating look at a corner of the movie industry that isn't really talked about that much, with a lot of really charismatic figures, mostly stunt women, but also some directors and actors and such. And I really appreciated that the documentary takes the time to trace back the history of stunt women all the way to the very beginnings of cinema and connect that to today, rather than just kind of focusing on a single point in time or just kind of, you know, making it very much about the present. There's a lot of these really lovely scenes. I think some of the best scenes are just these scenes of these older stunt women, like the ones that you just mentioned, Jeannie Epper and J.D. David, talking about to younger stunt doubles who are working today and just kind of reminiscing, commiserating, giving each other advice, you know, like bolstering each other up. You get to really see the bond there, and also their shared passion for this job that is frankly kind of insane. I always thought that stunt people seemed kind of mad, and this does not change that, but you really admire it. And you get a little bit of everything in this movie. There's a little bit of history. You get kind of a basic rundown of different types of stunts, a look at what it actually takes to be a stunt performer in terms of training, conditioning, a peek into this tight-knit community, some insight into the unique challenges that these people face, not only as stunt people, but as women, and often specifically women of color, and some just very charming, fun anecdotes about their time on set. So I imagine if you already know a lot about stunt women, maybe this documentary is not for you, but the problem is that a lot of us don't. So I think it's a really nice appreciation of this underrated but very hugely important section of the movie industry.
Yeah, and the volume of clips that they have to show all the women in action in various film and television programs, and the historic footage you were just mentioning, Angie, is remarkable as well. Wade, what do you think of Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story?
Absolutely loved it. It is a wonderful, wonderful tribute to a group, to a very small, closely knit community that really has for too long lived in anonymity. And that's partly their job. It's their job that we don't know who they are. They're supposed to disappear into the role and let the stars kind of fool us into thinking that what they're doing. But then you find out, well, Jeannie Epper wasn't just the stunt woman for Linda Carter on Wonder Woman. She was also Shirley MacLaine's double in the car, driving Jack Nicholson around crazy on the beach in Terms of Endearment. And you realize how rich these careers are and how rich their contributions are. But you also realize that they are at the mercy of the people that they have to double for when you're a stunt double. That if you don't look like someone, if you don't have the same body as someone, either you have to lose weight or you have to change your look. And that's especially hard for women of color. You know, there's a wonderful anecdote here where the Stuntman's Association wouldn't let women in at a certain point, but the Black Stuntmen's Association did, because they understood what it was to not be included. And so their empathy for Black stunt women in particular was so much greater. And, you know, eventually all of this does kind of coalesce into one community. And that's the beautiful part of it, is that it is so small that eventually those divisions over time have largely disappeared, and they know they all have to have each other's back. And having the young stunt women interview the older stunt women just really highlights what a crucial bond they have. It's a beautiful film.
It's its own family in many ways, even in some cases as they're competing with each other for these roles. And many of them are in multi-generation stunt families as well. I mean, Jeannie Epper would be joining us. Her dad was a stunt performer back in Hollywood's golden era, Wade.
Yeah, it's you know, they get inspired. I mean, I think she even says her brothers did it too, and you realize
kids,
that it does
grandkids. Yeah,
it's like working at the steel mill. They just pass it on from generation to generation, and it is really a very. I mean, they have a reverence for it that I think we don't fully understand, because it's our job to forget that it even exists.
Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story is based on the book of the same name by Molly Gregory, April Wright, the director. The film's unrated, and it's streaming on multiple on-demand platforms. Again, we'll be talking with the director, April Wright, as well as veteran stunt performers Jeannie Epper and J.D. David, coming up later this hour. Next up is the horror thriller Antebellum, starring Janelle Monáe, Eric Lang, and Jenna Malone. The film is written and directed by Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz. Wade.
Yeah, this is Bush and Renz are well known in the commercial field, the marketing field, and this is their writing directing debut. I wish this were a better movie. It's working with an interesting idea, and it just never really kind of gels. The writing is too on the nose, and it kind of wears all of its themes on the sleeve, and it never really coalesces. It wants to live somewhere between Get Out and an M. Night Shyamalan film. And I won't tell you which one because that would give too much away. There's too much M. Night Shyamalan. There's not enough Jordan Peele and Get Out. Basically, it stars Janelle Monáe as a very successful writer who finds herself in 19th century Southern slavery again. And how that happens and why that happens and where that leads to is supposed to be a great social commentary, but it never really pulls it together. It never pushes the buttons it wants to.
Antebellum is the horror thriller. It's rated R, available on multiple on-demand platforms. We have many more films to talk about as we continue with Angie and Wade as you listen to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. So good to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Wade Major and Angie Hahn. Next up, the thriller Alone, starring Jules Wilcox. John Hyams is the director and Matthias Olsen, the screenwriter. Angie.
Yeah, sometimes you get a film that isn't reinventing the wheel, but is just giving you a really good wheel, and that's great. So this is a survival thriller about a recently widowed woman running from a psychotic killer in the Pacific Northwest. And it's very solid for what it is. It runs a brisk 95 minutes long. It's doling out just enough information and just enough plot twists at just the right pace to ensure that you get what you came for, and it does not overstay its welcome. And I feel like more films should be like that. You get to know the characters just well enough that you understand what their deal is and have a little bit of investment in their predicament. You get some really lovely shots of the Oregon forest. There, you get a bunch of tense cat and mouse scenes, hide and seek scenes that have some interesting twists to them, and then you're done. And one thing I want to give this movie a lot of credit for is its plausibility. I'm not saying that anything in here is likely to happen, but I think it does a better job than a lot of horror movies or thrillers in that what unfolds doesn't seem too far-fetched. There isn't that moment where a character makes, where the plot hinges on the character making such a bizarre and inexplicable blunder that you spend the rest of the movie just being like, this would never happen. And especially, I think, if you're a woman who's been warned all your life not to go out at night, not to travel alone, not to talk to strange men, but also to be polite and accommodating and be nice to those strange men in case they want to hurt you. It alone feels like all those nightmare scenarios coming to pass. I think if it has a downside, it's that it's so lean and focused, it's hard to make this story seem very special. They make a little bit of attempt to deepen the kind of emotional themes of it with more reveals about the protagonist's history, but it's not really explored enough to amount to all that much. But like I said, there's nothing wrong with doing something really simple and doing it well. And if all you want is a taut little thriller to distract you, I think this fits the bill.
Alone, starring Jules Wilcox and Mark Menchaca. Wade, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've grown a little weary of Women in Jeopardy movies. That's not to say I'm not fond of some of the older ones, the exploitation films, I Spit on Your Grave, and a lot of the, you know, there's some really great old revenge films that sort of aren't afraid to be exploitation. And so I went into this skeptical, partly because John Hyams, who directed it, son of Peter Hyams, has kind of a, he has a very spotty career as a director. They're mostly sort of mid-level, phone-it-in genre films. Here, I think he really has turned the screws. He has a very contained premise. like Angie said, it's not reinventing the wheel. It understands what it is. It's a Woman in Jeopardy film. It's basically a two-hander for the most part. And it really is very, very tense. There's very little dialogue for the most part. Lots of good action, lots of good tension. It does have just two moments of ridiculous contrivance to push the story forward. But like Angie said, it's not egregious. You don't sort of roll your eyes and go, that would never happen. You kind of roll with it. You go, all right, it's pushing it, but, you know, for the sake of the ride, I'll go with it. And it's very, very efficient and effective. It knows what it is, and it doesn't try to do too much.
The film is Alone. It's directed by John Hyams, rated R, on multiple on-demand platforms. Blackbird, a drama starring Susan Sarandon, Kate Winslet, and Mia Wasikowska. The film directed by Roger Mitchell and Christian Torpa is the screenwriter. Wade.
You know, I really did wind up liking this, despite the fact that it's one of those films that we got kind of.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Between the late 80s to the mid 90s, where they just round up a whole lot of stars and they throw them together in a really, really melodramatic family drama. And it usually plays out like a stage play. And there's a lot of emoting. Steel Magnolias is one of those. And, you know, there's a few of those. August Osage County. You know, we get them every so often. This is one of those. It doesn't really tell us for many, many minutes, but we know what's going on, that in this very pastoral house, it sort of sits out in the marshes I guess it's in Oregon or somewhere in the northwest. Susan Sarandon is terminally ill and has rallied her family around her. Sam Neill is her husband. Kate Winslet and Mia Wasikowska are the daughters. Lindsay Duncan is her old roommate. Rainn Wilson is Kate Winslet's husband. All, you know, they have a kid. The family has rallied to be there for the day when she decides to undergo assisted suicide and put an end to her suffering. Okay, all the dirty laundry comes out and everything is aired, and it's one of those movies. And even though it's very, very theatrical, Roger Michel does a very, very good job staging this. He's an expert director. He's been doing this kind of stuff for a long time. So he gets you over the hump at a certain point, and you're along for the ride. You know where it's going to go. It's not surprising, but you're watching a very, very good director and some expert actors do what they do best. And so it winds up being rather an enjoyable sit.
Blackbird, the film. Angie.
I fear this is going to be a boring episode because Wade and I are just agreeing on basically everything. I also kind of felt the same way about this that he did. So when you press play on the movie, one of the very first things you see is a card for Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, which did not strike me as an auspicious start because I remember those books from my youth and they're very like weepy and, you know, kind of emotionally manipulative and all that. And the premise is obviously an automatic tearjerker, but I think it really earns those tears in the end. It's a movie where you have a pretty good idea from the start of where it's headed. So it's not a question of, you know, what's going to happen, but just whether the journey seems worth it. And in this case, I'd say yes, the performances and the relationships feel really lived in, which is no surprise considering how fantastic that cast is. So it becomes really easy to care about these characters. Sam Neill was a real standout for me as a devoted husband who is trying to keep it together and support his wife, even as he's asked to do and endure the unimaginable. And I thought Susan Sarandon also did a great job underplaying Lily, who is clearly a really vivid personality, but also dealing with a lot of complicated emotions and physical pain. And she never overplays it. And the script gives her a sense of humor, which I think helps to cut through some of the sappier moments. So the characters are maybe sketched a little bit broadly. Some of the obvious tension it hinges on maybe one too many plot twists. It also does feel a little bit stagey at times, but I feel like the actors inhabit their roles so fully and have such convincing chemistry that you really buy into it and get really invested. And by the end of it, I was just sobbing, basically. But it felt like so it earned those tears, so I wasn't mad about it.
Blackbird, the drama starring Susan Sarandon and Kate Winslet, Roger Michel, the director, Christian Torpa, the screenwriter. It's rated R, and you can see it on Lemley's Virtual Cinema. The documentary Kiss the Ground explores regenerative agriculture, that movement. Wade?
Really a great doc. And I don't often say this about advocacy cinema, because so much of advocacy cinema is propaganda. It just goes out and it gives you a one-sided pitch and kind of doesn't really suggest that there's another side to anything. Kiss the Ground is the first really successful piece of advocacy cinema I've seen since Blackfish. And for many of the same reasons, because the only flaw here is they don't invite enough people whom you might consider contrarians to their particular point of view. Most of these people do come from the left side of the political aisle. Nonetheless, the argument that they make is an inspiring one, and it's a thorough one. And because I have a little bit of background in this, because I've worked with people in the past who have some experience in this, I can speak with a little bit more expertise that what they're talking about really doesn't have a contrarian position. And it's namely this, that to really address the issue of climate change and carbon, it's a win-win scenario. We have to fix the soil. We have to change farming. We have to make an effort to reverse the most of the farming techniques that came to dominate the 21st and 20th century through industrial farming, and go back to actually healthy soil. And it goes all the way back and talks about the Dust Bowl and what we should have learned from that, and desertification. And ultimately, the lesson is farmers will do better. And they have farmers in there that say, I was struggling, I was losing money year over year over year when we had hailstorms that destroyed the crop and this and the other thing, and then I changed. And now I'm making more money, I'm making better food, the eggs are better for people, the livestock is healthier, they graze better. There's no losing point to this unless you're a pesticide manufacturer. They're the only ones that are going to lose out. Otherwise, it's a better economy, it's a healthier environment, it's better for climate change. It pulls the carbon out of the atmosphere and back into the soil where it becomes nutrients. I mean, it's sort of the Holy Grail philosophy of how we fix countless problems. And there's no downside to it. It's just about education and information. I really recommend this to everyone.
Kiss the Ground, the documentary, which will be streaming on Netflix starting next Tuesday. Joshua Tickell and Rebecca Harold Tickell are the directors of the Netflix documentary, which is unrated. The Amazon Prime documentary All In, The Fight for Democracy, features Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor of Georgia, at the center of the documentary. Lisa Cordes and Liz Garbus are the co-directors. Angie?
Yeah, so this is a documentary about the history and the present state of voter suppression in the U.S., and some of it revolves around Stacey Abrams, as you said, and she's the Georgia politician who ran and lost against Brian Kemp in 2018, but it's a broader issue. But it's a broader look at the issue. It's not really a Stacey Abrams documentary in the way that, like, Running with Beto was a Beto O'Rourke documentary. She does, however, make a really ideal "quote unquote" lead character of sorts, as someone whose family was historically suppressed from voting because they're Black, and then as someone who herself ran up against current, more insidious forms of voter suppression when she ran for office. It makes the story personal, which I think helps it not feel too much like a dry history or civics lesson. There's an element of that, but it's at least a really interesting, informative, engaging one. It does a great job of combining these, you know, facts about history with stories and anecdotes that make it feel like it's like it's personal. And it also does a great job of showing, connecting the dots to show us how we got to where we are today. And I do think that a lot of this information might be familiar to people who are already paying attention to politics, but of course we know a lot of people don't. If you are someone who was always taught that the fight for voting rights ended in the 60s, I think that this documentary is going to be a rude awakening, and that you'll learn a lot. And even if you do know a lot of the stuff in it, it's stuff that is helpful to remember every once in a while and to reconsider and really think about and really sit with, and you'll probably learn at least a few new things along the way. I mean, so much of the way that I think a lot of Americans interact with our government is based on the assumption that it's essentially fair, and I think this documentary does a great job of getting people to realize that that's not actually true. So it's a fun watch. It's also very timely and useful, and ends with some PSA of important tips on how to make sure your vote gets counted. So if it gets some people to double check, then their registration, then it's on its job.
All In, the Fight for Democracy documentary directed by Lisa Cordes and Liz Garbus, and it's streaming on Amazon Prime Video, rated PG-13. The documentary, Jay Sebring, Cutting to the Truth, about the haircutter, designer, and entrepreneur Jay Sebring, who was one of the victims in the Sharon Tate, Charles Manson murders. The film directed by Sebring's nephew, Anthony DeMaria. Wade?
Yeah, it's not a great documentary, but it's an important documentary. DeMaria's, you know, many of his interviews are done with substandard equipment. The audio is not very good. And so it has a certain raw feel to it in some respects. But Jay Sebring is back on everyone's radar, partly because of Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in which he was a significant figure. And so now there's a chance to shine a light on why he was relevant again. He's sort of one of those minor figures that disappeared into the Manson saga. And he should be famous independent of the infamy of that event, because as the film shows, he changed men's hairstyling. Mainly for celebrities, but in general, men had barbers and women had hairstylists until he came around. And he said, no, men can also have hairstylists, and that's okay. And and there are celebrities that owe their career changes to him. He really came in and innovated, and a lot of it had to do with his experience in the military. And, you know, of course, Sebring, not his real name. That's an interesting part of it as well. But it then also gets into the family stories. And that's why it's relevant that his nephew, the son of Sebring's younger sister, directed this, because there's a lot that you find out from the family. A lot of the inside stuff that's not just related to his career, to Hollywood celebrities, that gives you greater background on the man. So it really is it's a welcome documentary. I don't know that we'll have another Jay Sebring documentary. So this really does fill a vital role in our knowledge. It plugs it covers a space that I think needed to be covered and many times a long time ago.
Jay Sebring, Cutting to the Truth, the documentary directed by Anthony DeMaria. It's unrated, and it's available on iTunes and Vudu starting next Tuesday. And finally, Agents of Chaos, an HBO two-part documentary about Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Alex Gibney and Javier Alberto Botero are the co-directors. Wade, got about 30 seconds for this.
Yeah, Gibney's been on fire. He's made, you know, four films in about a year and a half. This kind of picks up from what he did in Citizen K. Great deal of information on the Russian troll farms that we did not have before. Everything else, unfortunately, is stuff that we all kind of already know. And he connects a lot of the smaller dots, but not the bigger dots.
All right. The film makes its debut on HBO and HBO Max next Wednesday evening, September 23rd, Agents of Chaos. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. Coming up, the director of Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story, and two of the women who were profiled in the film.
Wasn't born to do anything halfway. Wasn't born to try just a little. 'Cause it's just the way that I'm made. I'm
not made. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. As you listen to the theme song from the film Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story. Earlier, you heard our critics' recommendations on this documentary that's available on multiple on-demand platforms. It's based on the book of the same title by Molly Gregory, the documentary directed by April Wright, and it features a field of women who have been in this industry for years, others who are still very active, working as stunt coordinators and directors and producers, as well as performing some of the most dangerous stunts you can see. The film also full of extraordinary footage, even going back to the early years of cinema. We're joined by April Wright, the director of the film. April, thank you so much for joining us. Share with us a bit of the challenge of getting the stories of so many different stunt women.
Thanks for having me on the show. You know, the book was a great starting point, and Molly had done a tremendous amount of research. So I started with that. I had no idea women were, as you mentioned, doing stunts 100 years ago, back in the teens, that they were jumping from motorcycles onto moving trains and that type of thing. So that was amazing. I couldn't get any of those women, but I could get women like the other two that are on the call with us, J.D. David and Jeannie Epper and Julianne Johnson, who started doing it in the 60s and 70s. And so one idea I had for the film was to have younger stunt women meet them so that they could hear the stories directly from the women who paved the way before them. And then I wanted to bring it into the present day, like you said, and have, you know, the women that are doubling Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel and Black Widow and, you know, that are really doing it today at the top of their game. So I tried to show all the different points of view.
One of the things that's fascinating, we briefly talked about this during the review portion of the show, is how for so many of the women, just like men in this field, they're part of stunt families that, and maybe that's required, that sort of understanding of the risks that are involved, the hours that are involved, you know, being away from your family on location on a set. So maybe, you know, that's an advantage that other folks in your family know what that's about.
I think that's a good question for Jeannie, because her stunt family is very well known. But JD, who's also on the call, she didn't come from a stunt family. So it can happen both ways.
Well, let's talk with Jeannie Epper, who was retired from doing stunts, but had a decades-long career, including doubling Linda Carter on the television series Wonder Woman, also appearing in Kill Bill, Quarantine, many other films. Jeannie Epper, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I feel honored.
How did you get started in this business? Tell us about your father.
Well, my dad was a very active stuntman in the 30s and 40s. He doubled Gary Cooper, Henry Fonda, Ronald Reagan, Errol Flynn, you know, back in the really early days. And he had six children, and he was working on a show one day, and they needed a little girl around 9 years old that could do this particular horseback riding on the side of a mountain. I guess the assistant director asked him, "You got to have one of your girls has to be that age." Well, it was me.
Had you ever talked with your father about you following in his footsteps?
Oh, yes. Yes. Actually, all six of us did.
So did he expect that you'd go into it, or just say if you had interest that he'd, you know, support you in that?
Well, we've always been athletic and always had horses, and always we'd run by and jump out of trees onto horses. We were just a crazy bunch of kids who lived on a big portion of land, and that was our play yard. We didn't have any electronics. We had each other and the things we could create. And a lot of it was, I guess, early training that we didn't realize was going to turn into a career. Because my dad had sent me, at about age 13, he sent me to Switzerland to school because he's Swiss. And I spent 2.5 years there trying to be educated to be a lady. And then I came home and literally married a rodeo cowboy and got to the movie business.
Still a lady, but doing an unconventional job. That's Jeannie Epper, who's got quite a filmography and television credits to her name, including being the stunt double for Linda Carter on the popular television series Wonder Woman. J.D. David, also a retired stunt woman, who's gone on to be an inspector of stunt sites and to oversee aspects of how stunts are carried out. Her credits include Escape from L.A., The Blues Brothers, and she was the stunt double for Pam Grier in a number of those 1970s-era films. J.D. David, pleasure to have you with us.
It's my pleasure.
So take us back to your start in the business. How did you get into it?
Well, you know, I was riding my horse in Griffith Park, and there were a couple other, actually African-American men who rode their horses out in the park as well. And one day, one of them rode up beside me and they said, "I'm going to put you in the movies." And I went, "Yeah, sure." Little did I know that that was actually going to come to pass. he gave me a call, I guess it was about 2 weeks later, and he said, I need a girl who's about your height, 5'9", to double for an actress, and I need to do horseback riding, and I need to have her do some water work. Would you like the job? And I said, you're going to pay me to ride a horse and play in the water? And he said, well, pretty much that's it. And I said, I'm in. So shortly after that, I was on my way to Tucson, Arizona to double for an actress by the name of Denise Nichols.
Yeah, yeah, from Room 222.
Yes.
That's great. And so when you did it, were you, you know, bitten by the bug, so to speak, and determined this is what you wanted to do for a living?
Well, it never was my aspiration to do that. So it took me a while to get accustomed to this kind of work. But I fit in because I was, as Jeannie said, I was also athletic and rode motorcycles and did horses and, you know, did martial arts and things like that. So I kind of had a good foundation. So once I realized that all that would work for me in this business, then I caught the bug.
J.D. David with us, who's also the co-founder of the Coalition of Black Stuntmen and Women, which organizes for additional opportunities and training for black stunt performers. Talk a bit about the organization and the challenge in recruiting and retaining African-American stunt performers.
Well, I just want to add this. We also worked for women to have equal opportunity as well. That's why we were called Stunt Men and Women. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah.
Basically, there were struggles for African-Americans and there were struggles for women. There were particular struggles for African-American women because we like shared both sides of the coin with fellow stunt performers. And so I'd like to just talk from that aspect for just a minute.
Yeah.
If I could just talk about why we felt that this was necessary, because often there were African-American men, black men, who would double for women, and there were also white women who would do what's called a paint down with darken their skin to double for African-American women. And this was a big problem in the industry because what it did was it sort of took away a lot of work from women of color. Now, I've often thought about this, and I talked to Jeannie about this just the other day. I was thinking, which was worse, men putting on dresses or women painting themselves down to double for people of color? And, you know, actually, I think the biggest challenge was men doubling women. It was surprising, but that was the bigger problem. So anyway, all that all being said, the coalition was just created to sort of address those kinds of challenges that women, African-Americans, and women of color actually experienced.
We're talking with J.D. David, stunt woman for many years, including major Hollywood films and a stunt double for Pam Grier during the height of her film acting career in the 1970s. And Jeannie Epper, a decades-long career as a stunt woman. We'll be back in a moment. So good to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. We're talking about the new documentary, Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story, which is out on multiple on-demand platforms. April Wright is the director of the film, which features interviews with many different stunt women of varying ages and varying lengths of career, all of them highly impressive in the kind of work that they do. Jeannie Epper, retired stuntwoman whose filmography includes the TV series Wonder Woman, also Kill Bill Volume 2 and Quarantine, but the list of credits is extraordinary. And J.D. David, retired stuntwoman, her filmography including Escape from L.A., The Blues Brothers, Sudden Impact, and many others. We're talking with him about how the field has evolved, stunts for women, and some of the work that they're proudest of. And Jeannie Epper, one of the scenes with you in the film, You're going through a breakaway skylight, it looks like, as Wonder Woman, doubling for Linda Carter, coming down into a room, and we see people rush to you, making sure you're okay afterwards. And does any of that ever become routine, or is each one, are you very aware of the risks involved when you do those stunts?
Each and every one is completely different, so they're a challenge in their own way, depending on the room, the area, whether you're jumping down through a skylight straight down, or whether that one I think I had to stretch out and get. So they're not routine.
Yeah, and what sort of an adrenaline rush, if there is one, is it to do a stunt like that?
Well, a lot, but I do all that kind of beforehand, and then when I'm ready, I have a calm and a peace that comes over me that I know that I know that I can do it and that I'm not going to get hurt. It changes. You stay focused. You've done your homework. You've practiced, and you're ready. You're like any athlete. Things can change. Things can go wrong. In the surroundings. But I have...
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
I speak often as I have a great faith in God, and I always trust that He'll take care of me. So it's up to me, the camera, and God to protect me and get the shot.
Jeannie, when you look at how the industry has evolved over the years, do stunt performers generally and women stunt performers and doubles, do they have more of a voice in the safety process at this point?
I think they do. I think we haven't come as far as we hope to come, but yes, I think that things are changing. There's better equipment. There's better stunt riggers out there now. The young stunt girls are very blessed to have all these. My son Richard is a stunt rigger, and these guys are so equipped and talented that they help them along. They don't do the stunt for them, but they can help them. We were pretty much put your elbow pads and jump through the skylight and, make it work. Now with CGI and all that, they have ways to safety them and, brush it out or air it out or whatever they do, not taking away from their talent and all that goes along with it, but it has come a little bit. I think because of people like JD and a few of us have spoken up and we stick to our guns and we perform and get the stunt done, they listen to us. But if your front runners are not solid in what they do and can't get the job done, then it would be a waste of time for women. But I believe there's a handful of us that have really showed them, we're not built like men.
Jeannie Eppert, when you spend time with your kids and your nieces and nephews and siblings, and so many of you were in this business. Do you talk about some of the stunts that you've done? Is that much of a topic of conversation, or is it other stuff?
To be, so many of my brothers and all my brothers and sisters have passed on, and my mom and dad, but when we were growing up, yes, we had the advantage of sitting around the table and. One person maybe jumped a car one day and another one got lit on fire or rode a horse. So we would share and talk. And my brothers, I had three brothers and a dad who helped me along and taught me.
Jeannie Epper, a retired stuntwoman who doubled for Linda Carter on Wonder Woman and so many films. J.D. David, I know one of the goals of the Coalition of Black Stuntmen and Stuntwomen is to attract more stunt people of color. And as we see greater representation of African Americans in film, there's a greater need, of course, for stunt performers of color. Are you making headway in that effort?
Well, I'm kind of retired from that, too, but occasionally I get a phone call for me to address something that's happening, you know, in the industry in terms of people of color and women. You know, I think that that there's been a lot of headway made since the early days. Just like Judy was saying that, you know, we spoke out, and I don't want to say that we were like so talented that, you know, everybody listened to us, but we had names for ourselves, and so we were able to speak out, and people would listen to us. But just to answer your question about you know, things getting better. They have. They've gotten a lot better. It's almost like when Jeannie was talking about safety and how that's improved over the years. Also, people of color and women, they're being able to work has increased a lot over the years. And we've gotten some amazingly talented people. I can't tell you how amazingly talented the people that are coming in the business now. And I feel really blessed to be able to have been a part of opening doors in my organization, the Coalition of Black Stuntmen and Women. We're opening the doors for these amazing people to walk through.
J.D. David and Jeannie Epper, who were prominently featured in the new documentary, Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story, from director April Wright. April, just a quick closing thought on what you hope the film will do to perhaps inspire young people to consider the business.
Well, I think the film just shows you how talented these women are over history. And every audience I've watched the film with, you just get really pumped up. You get really inspired, really motivated. You want to go out and do something, whether it's workout or just do something in your life. They're incredibly inspiring.
Stunt Women, The Untold Hollywood Story is streaming on multiple on-demand platforms right now. Thanks for joining us for another Film Week on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. We're here with you, of course, every Friday at 11 and Saturday at noon on KPCC. Have a great weekend.